the sound of Miss Saigon. I'm Emily Auerbach.
I'm Norman Gilliland. This is University of the Air.
Miss Saigon is one of the world's most successful musicals, seen by over 33 million people in over 25 countries. A retelling of Puccini's Madame Butterfly, Miss Saigon is a tragic love story set in 1975 at the end of the Vietnam War. Joining us to explore the musical Miss Saigon is Andrew Abrams, artistic director of the Four Seasons Theater in Madison, which will be presenting Miss Saigon as a concert performance on Friday, March 30th and Saturday, March 31st at the Memorial Union Theater in Madison. With him in the studio are some of the cast members. In from Hawaii, Shauna Masuda, who will be playing the part of Kim, Chad Grody as Chris, Joe Dow as the engineer, Amanda Paulson as Ellen, and Robert Goderick as John.
Welcome, one and all, to University of the Air.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
Andy, about Miss Saigon, I mean, this is a musical set during not just the Vietnam War, but the very bitter last days of it. What gives with that? That sounds like a really tough assignment to keep the thing from being completely depressing.
Well, I'm not sure that the assignment succeeds in that respect because it's a downer, but it's a good kind of downer. There's still a love story there. And it doesn't certainly end happily, but, you know, it jumps around in time a little bit. It takes place, and I think it's 1973 for a little while, and then it jumps forward to 1976 after our lead Chris is back in America and, you know, has a new wife after he's left Kim back in Vietnam. The story is actually based on Madame Butterfly. Claude Michel Schoenberg, who was the composer, this duo wrote Les Mis as well before this. So they were already poised to write another big show after Les Mis because we all know Les Mis was no small
That was feat. A big hit. Yeah.
And it actually was inspired by a photograph that he saw of a mother sending her child off to America. She was in the airport in Vietnam and she had had a child with an American soldier and she was basically letting her child go to America, and he thought that was just so moving, sort of the ultimate sacrifice was the catchphrase of the show. And he started thinking, you know, what story could I build off of this? What does this remind me of? And immediately he went back to Madame Butterfly. And if you look at these shows, they're almost identical in their storylines. They're absolutely pretty much the same.
Well, can you take us back to the Puccini story then with Madame Butterfly? You mean just in terms of the American soldier and then someone from the
right. Well,
East.
I mean, it's actually even closer than that. He, you know, in Madame Butterfly, Pinkerton and Cho-Cho-San have a fling and end up having a kid together. And differences in Madame Butterfly, it doesn't mean as much. In this show, Chris and Kim, I think, are actually in love at the beginning. And that's one big difference. But she sits there and she waits for him to come back, just like Kim sits in Vietnam and waits for Chris to come back, knowing that she has this child that she's waiting to introduce Chris too, but the same cast of characters exists in Madame Butterfly. I mean, Sharpless is John. He's the one who introduces him to Cho-Cho-San and says, hey, you know, this might help you out a little bit. And we've got the engineer in Madame Butterfly. Of course, it's a much bigger role here. And then Pinkerton marries an American woman when he goes back to America, and they actually come back to Japan again, just like Chris meets Ellen. They get married and have to come back to Vietnam to find Kim and the child. So it's really, really close. I think it's closer than, you know, Bohem became Rent and Aida became Aida. You know, I think that it's actually the closest one of all to the real thing.
Any musical connection, do you think?
Well, it's a very Puccini-ish score. The sort of sweepy violins, you can hear a lot of the same kinds of ideas. You can tell that he was very influenced by the Puccini idea. Yeah, there's some pop elements to it, just like Les Mis, but you can really hear sort of the big sweepy melodies. And the duet, that Sun and Moon, that we'll be hearing in a little bit between Chris and Kim, is very similar to the love duet that they sing in Madame Butterfly.
Now, you're doing it as a concert performance.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about the helicopter.
That's always the question we get, is if you're doing a concert, where's the helicopter? We're going to actually be doing some really cool stuff with slides and projections behind us, and we'll be certainly having a helicopter sound. There will not be an actual helicopter landing on the stage, so people might be a little disappointed by that. But the orchestra's on stage, and you just get a really big taste of the music, which is really the biggest plus of this show, I think.
Well, the helicopter can, after all, sort of overshadow everything else.
Yes.
Special effects have been known to do that.
Exactly. You know, one of my favorite moments in the show that you don't ever get to see in Madame Butterfly is you actually see Chris leaving Vietnam and trying to get Kim to go with him to the United States, and she can't get through the crowd. She can't get to him. And you see all of the Vietnamese climbing the fence.
Chain link fence.
In fact,
yeah.
That's the clip that we heard at the beginning of the show, is them trying to escape Vietnam and not being able to leave, and Kim getting stranded there, which I think creates a much greater dramatic conflict than in Madame Butterfly, where he just kind of leaves and we don't really think that he cares about her once he leaves.
Well, one song that sets up Chris's sense of being torn in between two worlds is Why God Why.
Right.
Can you tell us about that
sure.
song before we hear it?
He actually, in the beginning, he and his buddy John go to this bar that they always go to where there are prostitutes, and they all sort of vote on who the best one is. And Kim just joined that night. She's only 17, and she's never, you know, done this before. And John helps Chris basically get with Kim, and they have a night of passion. And he wakes up, and he realizes that he actually has feelings for this girl, because only in theater can you fall in love in 5 minutes.
Or do you have to?
Or else you don't have a show, exactly. And he starts to question, why in this horrible place did I find this amazing girl and find love? And it progresses through the next scene where they wake up together and they have this whole conversation about he feels like he has to pay her for her services, and she's like, no. And right after that, they sing their first love duet. And we can certainly talk about the structure of this a little bit after, how this all fits together.
Why God, why?
Why does Saigon never sleep at night? Why does this girl smell of orange trees? How can I feel good when nothing's right? Why is she cool when there is no breeze? Vietnam, you don't give answers, do you, friend? Just questions that won't never end. Why God? Why today? I'm all through here on my way. There's nothing left here that I'll miss. Why send me now a night like this? Who is this girl in a rusty bed? Why am I back in a filthy room? Why is a voice ringing in my head? Why am I high on a cheap perfume? Vietnam, hey look, I mean you no offense, but why does nothing here make sense? Why, God, show your hand? Why can't one guy understand? I've been with girls who knew much more. I never felt confused before. Why me? What's your plan? I can't help her. No one can. I liked my memories as they were, but now I'll leave remembering her. Re-upped, sure, Saigon is corrupt. It felt better to be here working for the embassy. Cause here, if you can pull a string, a guy like me lives like a king. Just as long as you don't believe anything. Remembering her. This money's yours. Please take it all. Pay you one more.
No, no, I don't want anything.
Hey, what's wrong with you?
I've not done this before.
That can't be true.
Why would I lie?
All the girls lie. They just want to get out of here. Look, maybe you're not like that, but I don't know who you are.
Do you want one more tale of a Vietnam girl? Want to know I was bound to a man I don't love? Do you want to be told how my village was burned?
And so a relationship begins there. We heard Chad Grody as Chris and Shauna Masuda as Kim in the musical Miss Saigon, which is acknowledged to be a latter-day version of Madame Butterfly. But after all, if you have a great story,
It endures.
It travels. Yeah. Yes.
So you can kind of see some of the stuff we were talking about earlier with the sweepy melodies. That melody of Sun and Moon comes back throughout the whole show, a lot like the love duet in Butterfly just keeps sort of coming back over and over to remind us of their relationship. And the two songs, are connected with what anyone in opera would call recitative, because there's not really a tune in there. It's just kind of discussion, talking, and not dissimilar to opera. I really think this is one of the more operatic musicals out there.
And I was struck by the irony somehow of singing so beautifully about a village burning, about faces missing. There's something, I don't know, it's very wrenching to hear these horrible lyrics and the reality behind it if it's based on actual war, and then this gorgeous musical sound.
Which I think, I mean, again, Madame Butterfly kind of does the same idea. It's beautiful music and this awful thing that's happening to this woman, and she sings Un Bel Di, you know, one of the most famous arias ever.
No return.
And she's, you know, sitting at the window looking out, pining for this man, and it's so sad. And I think that the music actually helps the sadness of the piece move forward.
We have the same level of irony, dramatic irony in this, where we know that he's not going to be coming back, but she doesn't.
Yes, we do. I mean, we pretty much know. I mean, a lot of people are familiar with the story anyway, but we know he's not going to make it back. And we see her saying, she keeps singing in the show, "I'm waiting for my GI to return to me. He will." She says, "He'll come to me like the phoenix and he'll take me off on his wings." You know, one of the good lyrics in this show that I really like, because it just illustrates the fact that she's sitting there waiting for him. But the jumping around in time, I think the problem for me with Madame Butterfly is the whole second act is her sitting there in front of a window for, you know, 45 minutes sitting there. I mean, nothing happens. And I think the movement back forth in time in this show helps us. It keeps us focused and interested because, you know, right when we're in the middle of all of that, we jump back to where he leaves her and the helicopter's taking off. And it's very exciting and it's very upbeat in terms of tempo. But, you know, we're seeing all these people climbing the walls. I mean, it keeps your interest a lot, I think, better in some ways.
It's more dramatic.
Yeah.
More on the musical Miss Saigon when we continue in a moment with University of the Year. I'm Emily Auerbach, back with Norman Gilliland. Our guest is Andrew Abrams, and we're talking about Miss Saigon. Andy, I wonder about the casting of this show, because I know in some productions it's caused controversy, especially in terms of how along ethnic lines to cast a show that's split between Vietnam and America.
Right. It is really difficult. In fact, they had a huge problem when they brought the show from London to New York, because the guy playing the engineer was Jonathan Pryce, who's a big British actor, and the guy playing Tui, actually, who is her betrothed, was also a Caucasian guy too. And so there were lots of issues with British equity and American equity and stuff like that. But we actually knew that we needed to, you know, we did auditions. We do auditions and we see who we can find in our community. And here we're in Madison and there are some limits to what we have here in terms of people to fit specific roles. So we actually made an offer to Leah Salonga, who was the original Kim in London and on Broadway, and, you know, has done Jasmine in Aladdin, and, you know, she's pretty big. And she lives over in Manila, and I had a casting director friend in New York who was trying to get her, and basically she said, she's in Manila, and you wouldn't be able to afford to fly her from Manila to Madison to do your show. And so we thought, okay, now we need to go to Plan B. And Sarah Marty, our executive director, started scouring the internet and started looking on YouTube, of all places, which, you know, is a big new fad. And she sent me this link and she said, you have to see this girl sing. And sure enough, it was Shauna singing it in her production in Hawaii. It was anonymously posted. And, you know, that's what YouTube basically is. And it was her singing the song, actually, that we're about to do called I'd Give My Life for You. And I just watched it and was just blown away by her talent and ability to sing this music better than some people I'd even heard on recordings do it. And, you know, when she recorded it, she was 19 years old, which Leah Salonga was too when she was cast in this role. But, I mean, it was still pretty incredible.
Well, can you set up the song that we're about to hear?
Sure. This is the end of Act One, and basically she's singing to Tam, her son, saying she would basically do anything for him, which is sort of the precursor to us seeing that she's going to give up her own life in the end just to save her son.
Asking as little as you can, little snip of a little man. I know I'd give my life for you. You didn't ask me to be born, you. Why should you learn of war or pain? Make sure you're not hurt again. I swear I'll give my life for you. I've tasted love beyond all fear, and you should know it's love that brought you here. And in one perfect night, when the stars burned like new, I knew what I'll give you a million things I'll never own. I'll give you a world to conquer when you're grown. You will be who you want to be. You can choose whatever heaven grants, as long as you can have your chance. I swear I'll give my life for you. Sometimes I wake up reaching for him. I feel his shadow brush my head, but there's just moonlight on my bed. Was he a ghost? Was he a lie that made my body laugh and cry? Then by my side, the proof I see, his little one, gods of the sun, bring him to me. You will be who you want to be. You can choose whatever heaven grants, as long as you can have your chance. Stop what I must do. I swear I'll give my life for you.
You think it's harder to do a concert performance rather than a stage performance in terms of, you know, the acting and sort of the connecting to the other performers?
No, I think that good actors like we have know how to do that on stage. They sort of tune everything else out and still focus on everything that they're doing. And it's actually a lot easier for a company to do a concert version because you don't have to deal with sets and lots of costumes.
And who's going to be where when, of course, and
right.
All of that.
Exactly.
Sure.
Shauna, first of all, that was beautiful. But
thank you.
And I guess we didn't say your last name either when we came back into the section. Shauna Masuda, native of Honolulu, here mm-hmm. to do Miss Saigon. Can you talk a little bit about your experience of playing this role of Kim?
Back in Hawaii, at Army Community Theater, we did Miss Saigon, and I think that was the first time a community theater got to do it as a production, and I was 17 when I was cast, and I actually turned 18.
I was wrong about you. How old you were? Wow.
Just the right age for the character.
It was my first leading role, so it was pretty nerve-wracking, but it was a really fun show. And I don't know if it's a fun show, but it's a good show to do. I've also done back home Belle in Beauty and the Beast at Diamond Head Theater and Millie in Thoroughly Modern Millie, also at Diamond Head Theater.
And is there anything in particular about the character of Kim that you find a challenge?
Being a mother, I wouldn't really know what that is like right now. And her actual occupation while she was in Saigon. But my father was in Vietnam War, so I got a little bit of background and I saw pictures of the actual Gigi's and Kim's and whatnot.
One of my favorite songs from the show is actually the duet that you do with Ellen, the wife back in America. Andy, can you say something about that song and the place it holds in the show?
Well, I Still Believe is the duet. We actually, Kim and Ellen, actually sing this duet in completely different parts of the world at the same time. We hear Kim singing about how she dreams about him, and in her mind, Chris is next to her every night when she's sleeping. And then we see Ellen, his wife in the United States, and she wakes up because he has nightmares about Vietnam, and she actually hears him say the name Kim. And she doesn't understand what's going on because he never really told her about it, which we find out later. There's a whole little, not fight scene between the two of them, but it's a little bit of a heated moment in the show. But this is the two of them singing about Chris in different ways.
Last night I watched him sleeping, my body pressed to him, and then he started speaking. The name I heard him speak was Kim. Yes, I know that this was years ago, but when moonlight fills my room, I know you are here still. I still believe you will return. I know you will. My heart against all odds holds still. Yes, still. I still believe. Night I watched you sleeping, once more the nightmare came. I heard you cry out something, a word that sounded like a name, and it hurts me more than I can bear, knowing part of you I'll never share, never know. But still, I believe the time will come when nothing keeps us apart. My heart forevermore holds still. It's all over, I'm here, there is nothing to fear. Chris, what's haunting you? What you so want to hide, I need you too. More still. I will hold you all night. I will make it all right.
I still
you are safe
believe
with me.
As long
and I wish you would tell what you don't
I
want to tell.
I can't keep believing
what your hell
I
must
live,
be.
I live.
You can sleep
you
now.
Return.
You can cry
but
now.
I know why.
I'm your wife now.
Amanda Paulson is Ellen and Shauna Masuda as Kim.
Do we have anything like that in Butterfly, the prototype for this musical, where
they
you
never
have
sing
the two?
Together.
Yeah,
those two.
I wondered.
She doesn't. In fact, the wife doesn't show up in Butterfly till the very end.
Right. That's kind of almost like a punchline.
Yeah, we have a, we sort of have a funny joke going on because I always picture Ellen as being blonde to contrast the whole Kim thing, and where Amanda's, you can't see her, but she's quite the brunette, Irish brunette. So we're we're going to be wigging her and making her more American.
But it doesn't matter on radio.
No, I know, but it's just one of those funny things.
But that is an unusual device, having the duet take place between two characters who are half a world away.
And it's so clever because they're both kind of singing about the same thing, but and each have their own conflicts or issues with Chris. But they both picture him next to them. You know, one really is and one isn't. So it's very clever. One of my favorites in the show.
Now, I understand that with the part of the engineer that you had to do a cast change thanks to laryngitis.
Yes. Our original engineer, Donovan Armbruster, who was doing is an amazing actor, wonderful performer, developed viral laryngitis and told us that we, you know, he probably wouldn't have his voice back for up to 2 weeks, which was this was last week. And we open next week. So we were a little freaked out about that, but our amazing director, Joe Dahl, who's done a lot of musicals and wonderful singer and performer, I knew could jump in and save the day, and he is indeed doing that for us today.
Well, Joe, let me ask you then about the role of jumping in from director to performer and how you see the character, the engineer, certainly a very central and problematic character in this musical.
Yeah, I definitely see him as kind of the narrator. He's kind of does the through line through the whole production, kind of ties all the characters together, and he kind of is the eyes and ears of Vietnam at the time, of people wanting to leave and coming to America, and the idea of the American dream, and that it's got to be better in America than it is where they're at right now.
And who is this character? I mean, what is his background? Why is he called the engineer?
He is called the engineer. He's basically a pimp, I think, at the beginning. And he's the one that finds Kim, brings her into his nightclub called Dreamland. And to raise money, basically he's trying to raise money for himself to buy a U.S. visa to get out. And he propositions the sergeants that come into his bar to help him get his way out of Vietnam. So he pretty much uses everybody in the show for his own good. I see him a lot kind of like Fagin and Oliver in the sense mm-hmm. of that manipulating people, because he talks about the good years later in the show and all his precious jewels and souvenirs and all those kinds of things.
He's a Vietnamese character?
He is Eurasian. His father was French. His mother was Asian. His mother was a prostitute. His father basically pimped out the mom. And also the engineer would bring men to their home to sleep with his mother.
In the one other production I've seen, the engineer was actually the most interesting character in the piece, but I think the most complex.
Absolutely. There's just so much going on, I think, with him, and he's playing both sides of the coin, I think, to whatever advantage he can get. He's pretty slimy.
He's also our comic relief.
I
mean, he's the only somewhat comic character in the whole show. And both of his songs, while they are somewhat comic, have a sort of dramatic irony to them.
It's very tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
I mean, he talks about the promised land, but the things that he sings about and talks about, yeah, it's very ironic.
Mm-hmm. If we look at this from an English major standpoint, you want to talk about the role of cynicism in this play?
I think that the engineer is the most cynical character because he sees through everyone. He sees Chris wanting Kim. He sees what he can gain from everything in terms of Tui and Kim. He was worried that Tui, who Kim is betrothed to, who she ends up actually shooting, to add to the upbeat nature of the show, he's worried that Tui's going to come and hurt him in some way or shut him down. He pushes Kim in that direction, and when that's done, he pushes her towards Chris. And then, you know, I mean, everything is to his own gain.
So he's a manipulator.
He's a manipulator.
And especially when he finds out that Kim had a child by Chris, then I decide to use the child as the coin to
your ticket out of it.
Our ticket out is what he says.
Your ticket to get the American dream is
because he's
the
American.
Title of the song.
He's an American child.
And maybe we could hear your song, The American Dream.
My father was a tattoo artist in Haiphong, but his designs on mother didn't last too long. My mother sold her body high on betel nuts,
My job was bringing red-faced messieurs to our huts. Selling your mom is a wrench. Perfume can cover a stench. That's what I learned from the French. Then it all changed with the Bien Bien Phu. The frogs went home, who came, guess who? Are you surprised we went insane? With dollars pouring down like rain. Businessmen never rob banks. I can sell shit and get thanks. That's what I learned from the Yanks. I'm fed up with small-time hustles. I'm too good to waste my talent for greed. I need room to flex my muscles in an ocean where the big sharks feed. Make me Yankee. They're my family. They're selling what people need. What's that I smell in the air? The American dream. Sweet as a new millionaire, the American dream. Pre-packed and ready to wear, the American dream. Fat like a chocolate eclair as I suck out the cream. Luck by the tail. How can I fail? And best of all, it's for sale, the American dream. Greasy chinks make life so sleazy. In the States, I'll have a club that's four star. Men like me there have things easy. I'll have a lawyer and a bodyguard. To the Johns there, I'll sell blondes there that they can charge on a card. What's that I smell in the air? The American dream. Sweet as a sweet in Bel Air, the American dream. Girls can buy tits by the pair, the American dream. Bald people think they grow hair, the American dream. Call girls are lining Times Square, the American dream. Bums there have money to spare, the American dream. Cars that have bars take you there, the American dream. On stage each night, Fred Astaire, the American dream. Schlitz down the drain. Pop the champagne. It's all we have to entertain my American dream.
Well, that's a little bit of a twist from, a more vintage tune like America. You know,
yes.
How, it's a different
thing.
In
the orchestration, there's something called, honky-tonk piano or some kind of funky little, old-fashioned American device.
Gainer.
Yeah. Yeah, it says something. It says Mitzi Gaynor in the score.
It's like you want to dance, apparently.
Yeah.
Gives you some handle on the style of that.
More on the musical Miss Saigon when we continue with University of the Year.
Must not forget that they are all our children too.
a cappella chorus at the beginning of Act Two of the musical Miss Saigon, which is being produced by the Four Seasons Theater in Madison at the Memorial Union Theater, March 30th and 31st. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Emily Auerbach, and our guests, Andrew Abrams, who is the director, producer of the show, and we have cast members too. The chorus makes me wonder, do we get to hear them elsewhere in this production?
Yes, in fact, the chorus in a lot of these shows that these guys write, like in Les Mis and most recently in Pirate Queen, which we don't need to talk about. But they're very much about writing anthems, and the anthems always happen in the chorus. So there are, I mean, at least 10 numbers in this show that have a chorus, and they have to be big and they have to be loud. And we have an ensemble of about 35 or 40 people. And sometimes, a lot of times the men and the women split. The women will sing a number, the men will sing a number. The one we just heard, Bui Doi, that opens Act Two, it's all just men singing a cappella. The whole thing just starts with them. And it's pretty much everybody's favorite moment musically in the entire show, just because it's, you know, men singing a cappella in three-part harmony, which everybody loves. And in addition to a big chorus, we have a 26-piece orchestra, which will be on stage, and we have two percussionists who had to go looking on the internet to find what half the instruments were that were listed in their parts, because they were all Asian instruments like odaiko and Tibetan skull drum, and they had to.
Wow.
You know, a lot of times they can substitute stuff that sounds like that, but they had to.
Like an American skull drum.
Yeah,
of some kind.
No, yeah. It has to be Tibetan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds different. But they had to go looking for all these different instruments, which is pretty cool. And then there's three keyboards, and one of the keyboards we had to go looking to find out what their instruments like dantron and kalimba and kodo, which are all those sort of Japanese and Asian guitar strummy kind of sounds. And if the instrument, the synthesizers, which, you know, the ones we got are state of the art, so they have like some of these sounds, believe it or not, in them, we had to program the keyboards to fit our show, which can also take hours. But in addition to that, you know, we have a full string section and big brass, and it's pretty darn cool.
I'm amazed that there's room for the audience.
Well, they're on stage, so, you know, there's more room.
Is this a period piece in any way? I mean, does it try to be 70s at all, or is it just modern?
There are some moments, especially in, there's a song called If You Want to Die in Bed that the engineer sings towards the end of Act One, where it's about as 70s as you get. We have Rhodes organ, you know, in one of the keyboards, which, you know, sounds sort of like Stevie Wonder or one of those kind of singers. And you've got the flutes doing that 70s kind of swoopy stuff. It has its moments, but I would say that most of the time it stays pretty much in the middle. There's lots of Asian influence in this music as well, just like there was in Madame Butterfly, too. That's another great connection between the two pieces.
And in the chorus that we heard, the Bui Doi, what does Bui Doi mean? And can you say something about the song?
Bui Doi was actually the kids that were left behind in Vietnam that were half American and half Vietnamese. And literally translated, it means the dust of life, which, I mean, it wasn't a very positive term that they were given. And, of course, they were given that by the Vietnamese, who didn't like us very much there for a while. And those were the kids that they left behind. In fact, that was, you know, the image that we talked about earlier that the composer of this piece saw of the mother handing the child over. I think that's why they put this song at the center of their piece, because it was the center for them when they wrote it.
We haven't heard yet from John,
right,
played by Robert Goderich in this production, but can you say something about the character of John?
John is our Sharpless from Men and Butterfly. He's the friend who tries to do the right thing, and he's the one that encourages Chris to meet Kim in the first place. John's role in Bui Doi, he works for like a world... ambassador?
He's an ambassador who wants to, you know, bring it all back, bring him back, and just help the children, because he has camps where he talks about children looking for their fathers they'll never find, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, so John's role is basically to kind of tie everything together. He brings Chris and Ellen to Vietnam to see Kim. He's the one who then goes to Kim and tells Kim, come to the hotel and meet Chris. He's trying to be the good guy in all of this. He probably is the most positive protagonist in the entire show, actually.
Well, let's listen to Bui Doi.
Like all survivors, I once thought, when I'm home, I won't give a damn. But now I know I'm caught, I'll never leave Vietnam. War isn't over when it ends. Some pictures never leave your mind. They are the faces of the children, the ones we left behind. They're called Buy Toi, the dust of life, conceived in hell and born in strife. They are the living reminder of all the good we failed to do. We can't forget, must not forget, that they are all our children too. These kids hit walls on every side. They don't belong in any place. Their secret they can't hide. It's printed on their face. I never thought one day I'd plead for half-breeds from a land that's torn. But then I saw a camp for children whose crime was being born. They're called Buy Toi, the dust of life, conceived in hell and born in strife. We owe them fathers and a family, a loving home they never knew, because we know deep in our heart that they are all our children too. These are souls in need. They need us to give. Someone has to pay for their chance to live. Help me try. Children, tell.
A great song. Makes me wonder, though, what is the overarching message, if there is one, of this musical? Because we've heard one character who is, you know, expressing her hope, which is not to be borne out, that the father of her child will return. We've heard the cynicism from the engineer. We've heard some confusion, perplexity on the part of the wife. Mm-hmm. And, of course, these misgivings on the part of the American who's going away. So what is the thrust of it all?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I think that over top of all of this, there are certainly some political leanings, I think, in this show that try to make America seem like kind of the good guys in a way. I mean, Chris even says, I'm an American, how can we fail to do good? Which in the song he's saying, I thought that and realized that that wasn't the case. But I do think with a song like this, you know, there are some political ramifications with it too, saying we really should have done more.
We have responsibility.
Yeah, we have a responsibility. And, you know, it's written by two Frenchmen. So it's kind of interesting to see their take on America versus Vietnam.
Can you say something about the famous song, It's Her or Me, and how that...
Well, it's funny. Actually, there's a little funny story with that. There are three different lyrics for this. Another interesting thing about the show is that it's been redone as it's progressed through its different forms. Like, when it came over to Broadway, they had redone some of the lyrics. They had redone some of the music. And one of the songs that got done three times was this one. For Ellen, they couldn't quite find the right take on what they felt her position was on everything. So the first lyric, actually, we were watching the making of this, which you can actually get on, it's a DVD you can rent. The first version of this lyric was, don't say I'm hurting, I think, something like that. And then when it came to Broadway, or to London, I don't remember where it was changed, it became It's Her or Me. And then again, a few years later, they changed it to Now That I've Seen Her. And funny, we've all, you know, both Amanda and I have been talking about this forever, and we always have felt that It's Her or Me is a stronger lyric So we kind of went back to the original lyric, even though the score has the new one written in.
And what's the context of when in the show this is?
This is in the second act. We don't really get too much into Ellen until the second act. And she meets Kim for the first time. Kim comes to the hotel room, and Ellen thinks she's the maid. And then Kim basically yells at her and says, you have to take my kid and take care of him. And Ellen says, we want kids of our own. And then Kim basically, you know, yells and runs out. And Ellen is left with this dilemma. And this is basically the song that she sings.
There are days, there are days when your life clouds over and the world gets so dark that all at once you can't tell night from day. There are times when your heart cries, this isn't happening, but the truth is cold and real, and I know this storm won't go away. It's her or me. Now there's no way to hide. She is not some fling from long ago. It's her or me. Now I know. Was better when I didn't know. In her eyes, in her voice, in the heat that filled the air, part of him still lingered there. I know what pain today must be, but if it all comes down to her or me, I won't wait. I swear I'll fight. It's her or me, and it's me he must choose. I don't hate this girl, even so.
It's amazing how much mileage you can get out of a simple love triangle, isn't it?
Yes.
Plot after plot, opera after opera, musical after musical.
And that was Amanda Paulson we just heard in the role of Ellen. And let me re-acknowledge the other singers that we've had in the studio with us. We have had Shauna Masuda playing the part of Kim. Joe Dahl is the engineer, and he's also the stage director. Chad Grody is Chris. And Robert Goderick as John, along with Andrew Abrams, who's going to be the director of the Four Seasons Theater production of Miss Saigon March 30th and March 31st at the Memorial Union Theater. And Andy will put a link to your website on our University Year website.
I'm Norman Gilliland with Emily Auerbach, and I hope you'll join us for the next hour of University of the Year.